Pains and inconsolable. Make it stop! I don't want to know! Oh, Jesus! I fight back my tears, roaring to the sky, begging for someone up there to stop this insanity. I'm torn, needing to comfort my wife as she's attacked with every tiny detail of our history all at once, the dams opening and flooding her fragile brain. But there's a psychotic woman a few feet away on the trampoline with my babies. I know what she's capable of. I know the hatred she harbors for me. Yelling, I break away from Ava to face my nemesis. Lauren's smirk is wider, sicker, uglier. The kids are staring at their mum, shocked and confused at her hysterics. Opening my arms, I swallow down my fear, working on keeping my face sure and strong. They need to see me strong. Kids, come to Dad. They both take one step forward, but before they can go any farther, Lauren puts an arm around each of their shoulders, pulling them in tightly. They flinch, their eyes round now, but they don't struggle. I'm so proud they're smart enough to keep their cool. They're quite happy here with Auntie Lauren, right, kids? She kisses both of their heads and turns her eyes on me. Adorable, Jesse, really adorable. And now you have another on the way. How exciting for you. Another addition to your perfect family. Ever wonder what our Rosie would look like if she'd have made it to this age? If you hadn't killed her? The pain that bolts through me is excruciating. It makes me physically retch, my stomach twisting nastily. The kids remain silent, unmoving, but the shock in their faces is undeniable. I just need to get them away from her. Lauren? I keep my tone level and sure, taking slow, careful steps toward the trampoline. You don't want to hurt my children. You're not evil. Think about what you're doing. Of course I don't want to hurt them. She laughs, almost hysterically. Whatever the fuck they've been doing in that psychiatric ward all this time, sure as shit hasn't fixed her. Then take me, I say. Wherever you want to go, we'll talk. See if we can work this out. Can you bring Rosie back? No one can bring Rosie back, Lauren. I reach the foot of the trampoline, threading my fingers through the netting myself. Getting my face closer, I see the hatred in her eyes amplify. Take me. You want to hurt me. They don't deserve to suffer from my mistakes. Painfully, I silently acknowledge that either way, my children are going to suffer here. There's no escaping it. Either this lunatic woman will hurt them, and I'll go to the ends of the earth to prevent that, or she'll hurt me, and that, in turn, will hurt them. I can't win. But the latter is the lesser of two evils. I'm between the devil and the deep blue sea. No, Jesse. Ava's voice comes from nowhere. Pulling my eyes to the left, she's staring at Lauren, eyes almost crazy, and I know it's because all the madness that's just ransacked her head has made her that way. I've made her that way. She's already tried to kill you twice. Third time's the charm, Lauren smirks. You're not getting the opportunity ever again. Ava's head starts to shake, her eyes falling to me. I'm not going to that level of hell again. I'm not praying for weeks upon weeks for you to wake up. I'm not letting her hurt you again. You'll have to fucking kill me first. That's sweet, Lauren laughs again. But you're forgetting I have something you both cherish right here. She hugs the kids closer. Don't get ahead of yourself, Ava. She casts her cold eyes over to me. Seems your husband wants to come with me. Releasing the kids, she collects a bag from the soft, cushioned edge of the trampoline and reaches inside. I get a glimpse of the handle of a handgun, and air enters my lungs so fast I stagger back one step. I'll come. No! Ava glares at me, furious. I ignore her and walk around the edge of the trampoline, unzipping the entrance. Jesse! She's losing it, and I flip her a death stare, silently asking her what fucking choice I have. She has our kids, for fuck's sake. Ava's so panicked, so overcome with what's transpiring, she's not thinking straight. She snaps her mouth shut and diverts her attention to Jacob and Maddie. And then it hits her. Her duty. I see the lioness in her rocket to the surface, accompanied by a newfound hatred for the woman now coming down the ladder of the trampoline, her gun pointed directly at my chest.
Dad?
Jacob's voice is ragged and cracked as he collects his sister and walks her to the farthest edge of the enclosure, as far away from Lauren as he can get them.
Dad, no!
It's fine, mate. I force a smile at him. Everything is going to be all right. I promise you. I don't make promises I can't keep. And I'm ignoring the voice inside my head that's telling me I just broke that rule. Lauren reaches the bottom of the ladder and stares up at me as she slips her feet into a pair of heels I recognize. Ava's. The hair. The dress. The shoes. It's all been planned. I'm her fucking date. You can drive, she says, reaching into my pocket. Every muscle I possess freezes as she feels around inside. I hiss when she skims my limp cock. We'll fix that, I'm sure.
Get your hands off him!
Ava screams, the wild in her eyes reaching a whole new dangerous level.
Pipe down, sweetheart!
Lauren pulls out the keys from my Aston and thrusts them into my chest. Let's go. My limp hand takes the bunch, my eyes darting quickly to Ava. She's made it to the kids, and they're huddled together in the middle of the trampoline, my baby's faces in their mum's chest, hiding from this horror scene. I'm driving. I say the words as clearly as I can, praying Ava hears my silent message. In my car.
Yes, in your car.
Lauren wedges the gun painfully in my rib.
Go!
I'm forced to turn before I get the opportunity to check for any recollection on Ava's face. I fear she's too lost in the new memories to realize what I'm trying to tell her. As I'm guided to my car by the gun held at my back, I tussle with the temptation to turn and wrestle it from her hands. I'm big enough to easily overpower her. But that gun... One tweak of her finger, no matter how fast I am, and I'll be gone. And then Ava and the kids will be helpless. No way am I risking their lives. Fuck mine. Fuck this. I deserve it all. Had I enlightened Ava, grown some balls and told her everything, she would have been aware of Lauren. Would have maybe seen some signs. Instead, I was the coward I was years ago. And I've put the most precious people in my life at danger's door. My feet are heavy. My heart slowing with each step I take. She won't need to kill me. I'm dying little bit by little bit the farther I walk away from my family.
Chapter 54. My attention is divided between the road and Lauren's lap, where the gun is resting lightly. Her finger curled around the trigger. I know fuck all about guns. I wouldn't be able to tell you if it was loaded or even ready to fire. This could just be a show. I'm unwilling to test could be. All I know for sure is this woman wants to make me suffer. I don't know where we're headed. I'm taking instructions as she gives them, following the road out of the city. I don't know whether to talk to her, attempt to make her feel at ease. I have not one fucking clue how to handle this. I'm just so thankful Ava and the kids are out of harm's way. And yet Ava must be terrified by what's happening now and by the flood of memories. My knuckles go white on the steering wheel, my heart pulsing with pain. I could go on a rampage, destroy everything in sight, starting with Lauren. But I have to stay calm and sensible if I'm going to get through this. As my phone persistently vibrates in my pocket, I mentally talk to Ava, telling her over and over to think about what I said as I left. I beg for the penny to drop through her despair and fear.
Right at the roundabout.
Lauren breaks into my thoughts with her curt order, and I follow her instructions, taking the country road farther out of the city. Every time I catch sight of her, I feel sick.
You like?
She asks, scrunching her hair when she catches me looking.
You're into brunettes, right?
I'm into my wife and my wife alone. The venom in my tone is savage but unstoppable. She ignores my scathing retort and proceeds to pat down her black lace dress.
She picked this for me.
One foot comes up and rests on the dashboard.
And these are hers. You must like what you see.
What I see makes me want to vomit. You look very nice, Lauren, I say carefully, silently running through my options. There are three, as I see it. Fight or flight being two of the obvious, though that gun she's holding like it could be a vital part of her outfit is rendering those options redundant. Then there's the third option, the one I'm going to take. Pacify her. Draw her into a false sense of security. How did you find us?
Well, there I am enjoying my morning coffee reading the paper and suddenly I'm staring at her. She lost her memory, they said. Such a shame. They kindly mentioned that Ava and her husband ran a health club. It wasn't hard to find you.
She sighs, pointing the gun to the signpost up ahead as I bristle and curse the fucking journalist to hell and back.
Left there.
It's the area where we grew up. Why are we here? I take the turn and keep my speed at 30 as we drive down the narrow country road toward the village.
A trip down memory lane.
She turns in her seat.
Remember the barn where we first kissed?
Yes. I remember the barn, but I have no recollection of the kiss. She could be making it up. Or not. Over the years, I've successfully eradicated most memories of Lauren from my life. Cleansed my mind and left space for only the things that mean something to me. Like Rosie. Like my brother. I want to ask when she was released from the nut house. I also want to ask what imbecile deemed her safe to the outside world, though I know bringing that up would be unwise. Besides, I know she's safe to most people. It's just me and my family she has a vendetta against. She's volatile. I shouldn't say anything to push her over the edge. We were assured that if she were ever released, we'd be informed, and it was a massive if. How the fuck did this happen? Why didn't we know? More questions mount, tearing up my mind as I stare ahead. The clouds in the horizon are dense and low, giving the illusion of an impressive mountain range. Though however dull the sky is, the surroundings are beautiful. Fields stretch for miles, a patchwork of yellows and greens, though my appreciation is stunted by memories of my childhood and teenage years. We approach the small, idyllic village church where I married the lunatic now sitting next to me. Flashbacks hit me from all directions, my hands now bloodless, my jaw aching terribly from the force of my bite as I fight the memories away. I see me, barely a man, standing at the entrance of the church, Lauren's parents talking me into entering. There's a sea of faces, all smiling. I see the priest up ahead, his Bible resting in his open hands. I hear myself asking him to pray for me, to help me. He couldn't have heard my silent pleas. That, or he and the Mighty One, decided I was getting what I deserved, that I would pay for the rest of my life for being so reckless with my brother's life. And I have. I've paid tenfold. When does it stop? When will the punishments end?
Fond memories. We could have been so happy.
Lauren sighs dreamily as we pass the ancient place of worship, the car jumping from the endless divots in the old road.
Until you ruined it.
Turn down the next road on the left. I say nothing, for fear I might say the wrong thing and take the next lane as instructed. I see the barn up ahead, the ramshackle building barely still standing. What are we doing here, Lauren?
Shut up, Jesse.
She spits as I roll to a stop outside the deserted barn.
I'm surprised you haven't asked me about my delightful stay courtesy of Her Majesty the Queen.
What does it matter? I turn to face her, enduring the face of pure evil. You're here now.
I was such a good girl.
She smiles as if thinking fondly.
The doctors knew I wasn't bad to the core, just terribly hurt. Assessments proved it. They put me on a program. I was an A-grade student, the perfect reformed example. So they released me.
She smiles proudly, while I force my frown into hiding. She fooled them. Made them believe she's stable so she could come out here and finish a job she started over a decade ago.
That's when I became Zara Cross.
They gave you a new identity.
The good old justice system. I was vulnerable, Jesse. You see, I'm not crazy. I know damn well what I'm doing, and I know that as soon as I rid this world of your despicable life, I'll be carted back to a padded cell to live out the rest of my days.
She pokes me in the arm with the barrel of the gun.
Except I don't want to live anymore. I'm done with this life.
My eyes lift from the gun to her empty, dull pits of fading blue, and I comprehend immediately that she means it wholeheartedly. Lauren, it doesn't have to be like this. I try to work on her reason. You can be happy again. She laughs. It's cold and it's fake.
You mean like you? You think I should replace Rosie and pretend she never existed? No, Jesse, never! And do you honestly think I'm willing to stand by and watch you wash away her memory with a few more kids and that wife of yours? Our daughter deserves justice.
Another poke of my arm.
Get out!
I blindly reach for the handle, pulling myself from the car as I keep an eye on Lauren getting out of the other side. Her plan now is crystal clear in my head. She'll pull that trigger in me and then turn it on herself. She's not going back to prison. As she rounds the car, she struggles on the uneven ground in Ava's heels, having to hold the bonnet of my car for support. She eventually kicks the shoes off, motioning with the gun toward the barn. I silently lead, looking up at the filthy wooden planks that make up the derelict structure, seeing endless broken slats hanging off, most cracked. Once we're inside the huge empty space, I look down at the concrete floor scattered with old strands of hay from decades ago, my steps echoing around us.
Up the stairs.
There's a rickety staircase with one or two steps missing. I honestly doubt the rotten wood will take my weight. Lauren, that doesn't look safe.
Ah,
she coos, jamming the gun in my lower back.
Are you worried I'll injure myself?
I think for a moment. Considering another way through this nightmare. How long has it been since someone showed her any compassion or love? How long since anyone actually worried about her? Her parents disowned her. She's had no one except the professionals poking at her mind. I flinch where I stand at the bottom of the stairs, sick at the thought of it. Can I do it? Can I fool her into thinking I actually care? My stomach turns, my mind reels. The words I should say are thick on my tongue. She loved me once, and something deep and disturbing inside me warns me that she still does. That's why she's so fucked up. That's why she's on a mission to destroy me. If she can't be happy, then neither can I. If she can't have me, then no one can. There's a fine line between love and hate, and I think Lauren is straddling that line. The question is, can I tip her in my favor? I don't want to. What I want to do is rip her apart piece by piece until she's nothing but a pile of body parts at my feet. But no matter what, no matter how I get there, I need to make it back to my wife, preferably in one piece. I can't put Ava through the agony of thinking she's lost me again. I've been there myself recently. It's lower than hell. I slowly turn to face Lauren and conjure up the words my heart forbids me to say. Yes, actually, I do care. I keep my eyes on hers, searching for anything to suggest this might work. It's my only hope. Would that be so hard to believe? It happened so fast I nearly miss it. A flash of surprise followed by a frown.
You care?
She's on the verge of laughter. Though I hear hope. Actual hope. And it drives me, confirms I'm bang on the money. I feel like I'm selling my soul to the fucking devil, but I'll buy it back. One way or another, I'm making it home. I never stopped caring, Lauren. Look at my life before you. I lost the person I was closest to in the fucking world. It fucked me up. I did things I regret. Said things I didn't mean. It wasn't personal. You were just another casualty on my road to self-destruction. It's now I realize that most of what I'm saying is true. There's just one small bit that isn't. The caring part. But the truth is, I only stopped caring, stopped feeling guilty when she turned on Ava all those years ago. At that point, she was dead to me. I see doubt in her eyes, but I also see the need to believe me, and now I believe her. I don't think she's crazy at all. I think she's broken. I think she needs closure, and I think the only way she feels she can get it is by destroying me and then herself. I can make her see differently. I have to make her see differently. I take one careful step toward her and she lowers the gun just a fraction. Why did you do this? I ask, motioning up and down her body. The dress, the hair. Why, Lauren? There's only one explanation. She wants to be Ava. She wants to be mine. Her lip quivers. It hurts me how much you love her. It killed me to listen to her tell me over yoga and coffee how devoted you are. Why couldn't you be that for me? Why couldn't you love me with that much passion? Her voice finally cracks. When I was ill, like Ava has been, why couldn't you do whatever it took to make me better? Tears form a river down her cheeks. You will do anything for that woman. What is it about her? And there we have it. I'll help you, Lauren. I promise I'll help you. I'm surprised I really mean it. I don't know how I can help her, but honestly, if it means I get back to my family, I'm prepared to do anything. Will you love me like you love her? The words she wants to hear won't come. I can't say them. I'll help her, but I can't love her like she wants to be loved. She smiles, but this time it's not malicious, it's sad.
You can't.
I know. She points to the stairs. I take a long breath, pinching the bridge of my nose. Lauren,
you've said enough, just go.
I close my eyes as I turn, looking up to the heavens as I take the unstable old staircase to the hay store above.
Don't do this, Lauren, I beg you.
It's all I have left. Please. I don't get a reply. What I get instead is the clicking sound of the safety being disengaged. The barn is empty. There's nowhere to take cover if she gets trigger happy. I look over my shoulder as I reach the top of the stairs, finding her a few steps behind me. Not too far, but far enough to have the upper hand. Far enough to fire before I make it to her should I fight. I'm fucking snookered. She swallows as she points to a huge opening in the wood looking out onto the countryside. I've heard funny things run through your mind when you're staring death in the face, and currently running through my mind is how beautiful that view is, how lush and green the land is, how this might be the last thing I see. I approach and widen my stance, my back to Lauren. My mind settles, but determination fights forward. Here I'm a sitting duck. I'm a dead man. No question, her aim is clear. If I charge her, she'll be shooting in a rush, she'll be clumsy, she might hit me, but the chances of her getting her aim right under pressure are reduced. I turn, every muscle in my body readying. Her head cocks, and she must see the determination in my gaze because she flexes her two-handed grip and the gun. Don't do anything stupid, she warns.
Then just fucking shoot me, Lauren.
I goad. Why is she dragging this out? One would assume her sick head is enjoying the anticipation of my death. Or could she be searching for the strength she needs to kill the man she loves? I don't get the chance to reach a conclusion on that. I hear a noise downstairs, the sound of a piece of wood snapping. My gaze shoots to the gaping hole in the floor where the stairs drop. More wood snaps, the sound echoing through the barn and ricocheting off the walls. I see something emerge from the opening, and it takes me 2 seconds to recognize who. There's no mistaking the shiny, bald black head. My heart lurches as Lauren swings the gun in his direction, and he's completely unaware.
John!
I yell, making Lauren spin around to face me. I raise my hands in the air and back up until I'm forced to stop or plunge 50 feet from the opening to the concrete below. Motherfucker, John breathes once he's made it safely to the top of the stairs. He slowly pulls off his sunglasses. His nostrils flare, his huge chest heaves. Put the fucking gun down, Lauren. Most would heed the threat in his booming voice. Lauren isn't most. She moves a few paces to the right, putting her at an even distance between both of us, the gun swinging back and forth between our bodies. My head twists and warps, my panic rising. Did Ava click? Did she realize what I was telling her? Then why the fuck didn't she call the police? Not John, the police!
You should go, John, Lauren warns. This is between me and Jesse.
I'm going nowhere. He's resolute. And I know he means it.
Then you can watch.
Before I can even register, the gun is on me, her body turning in what seems like slow motion. And she wastes no time pulling the trigger. The loudest bang pierces the air, and my body jolts as John throws himself across the barn toward Lauren. My vision blurs, but I manage to see her turning the gun on herself, taking it toward her temple. John roars, and Lauren crashes to the ground. I hear another bang as they roll across the dusty floor. It's only the sound of Lauren's screams that tell me she missed. Numb, frozen, I look down at my torso, searching for the dark crimson soaking my t-shirt. There's nothing. Then there's something. Pain. Fuck me. Pain. I hiss and grasp the top of my arm, the blood now found growing rapidly on my sleeve. The bolts of pain only keep my attention for a microsecond, a grunt from John realigning my focus. Lauren's made it onto her feet, and she's still holding the gun. She walks back, struggling for breath, wild eyes darting. She looks disoriented, unsteady as she backs up, the hole in the floor getting closer and closer, the wood all crumbled around the edges. I see what's about to happen, and for the life of me, I can't think why I try to warn her.
Lauren, no!
I'm too late. The floor cracks and she loses her footing. She screams. It's a blood-curdling scream, a scream that will haunt me for the rest of my days. A scream that tells me she doesn't really want to die. Instinct has me rushing forward as her arms flail and she plummets backward, the gun firing again before the floor completely gives. I flinch and look away when her head crashes against the edge of a jagged piece of broken wood. As she falls through the floor, the impact silencing her. I know she's dead before she hits the concrete below, but I still wince in a helpless, broken sob when the thud of her body meeting the ground penetrates the air. The sound of cracking bones tortures. My breathing diminishes, my blood running cold, as I fight to get air into my lungs, the pain kicking back in. My arm begins to throb. Becomes lead hanging from my shoulder. Forcing my eyes back to the gaping hole in the floor, I carefully tread to the edge of it and peer over. I don't know why. I'm in conflict, relieved, sad, angry. Lauren's mangled body lies in an unthinkable position, her dead eyes staring up at me. I hiss, jumping back from the edge, a low, pain-filled moan piercing my muddled head. But the moan doesn't come from me. I whirl around and find John on his back, a pool of dark red growing around his big body. His bloody hand is resting on his abdomen. Shock steals me. Panic finds me again. I'm a mass of useless muscles. My mind has quit thinking, my head an empty mess.
Help me, you stupid motherfucker.
His words are all but a gargle of pain, his eyes rolling in their sockets. His weak demand wakes me from my inertia, and I bolt across the barn, dropping to my knees by his side. His breathing is shallow, his black skin paling. My hands go to my hair and pull, panicked.
Fuck!
I yell, finally finding the sense to get my phone. I dial 999, demand an ambulance, mindlessly reel off where we are.
John!
I grab his face, squeezing tightly. John, keep your eyes open, buddy, just keep your eyes open.
Fuck you.
He breathes, trying to focus on me.
There's 10 of you, you bastard.
There'll be 1,000 of me if you don't keep your eyes open, big man, and every one of them will be kicking your big black ass.
My voice is breaking, my hope dying with every second that passes, his eyes closing for longer each time. A lump the size of a small planet wedges itself in my throat.
John!
I take his shoulders, shaking, and his eyes drag open with effort. The whites, usually stark and bright, are bloodshot.
What the fuck, John?
I lose control of my emotions and spill tears all over his face.
What the fuck have you done?
He smiles. It's tired and his body goes limp in my hold. He gasps, sucking in oxygen.
I told Carmichael.
Drawing air, he winces.
Motherfucker.
He breathes, straining to keep his eyes open.
I told him I'd always look out for you. You.
His confession splits my heart clean in two.
John,
I choke, struggling to see him through my flooding eyes.
It's time for you to go it alone, boy.
His eyes close, and I release a ragged sob, shaking him harder, desperate for him to stay with me.
John, you bastard, open your fucking eyes!
But he doesn't, because he's already gone.
No!
I drop his shoulders, falling to my ass and crying like I've never cried before. Relentless pain ripping through my broken body.
John.
I mumble, squeezing my eyes closed. Unable to see him like this, lifeless, limp. This man has sacrificed everything for me. Love, happiness, freedom. He's been there at every turn, good and bad, and now he's gone. Gone because of me. He's given the ultimate sacrifice. His life for mine. My sobs come thicker and faster. My guardian angel. He's been by my side through good and bad, has never faltered in his loyalty. He's kicked my ass and picked me up when I've been down. And the space inside me, the special place in my soul where John belongs, is gaping wide open. He's my fucking hero. And he's gone.
Chapter 55.
Sirens, lights, shouts. The chaos in the middle of the pretty countryside is ugly. Voices are speaking to me, but I'm hearing no words. Regret and guilt leave no room for anything else. How was she granted release? I ask the police officer who's been trying to speak to me as a paramedic inspects the hole in my arm.
All this is because some clever prick was hoodwinked by a crazy woman.
I shrug my arm, knocking the paramedic's hands away.
Mr. Ward, I know nothing of the circumstances surrounding your ex-wife's release from hospital.
Hospital?
I stare at him in disbelief.
No, a hospital is where you go when you're ill or injured, not when you're a fucking psychopathic, merciless woman with a fucked-up vendetta.
I feel hands on my arm again. Get the fuck off me!
I bellow, making her back away vigilantly.
Mr. Ward, please calm down.
Calm down! I wouldn't be able to find calm if it dropped at my feet. Anger is consuming me. I feel dangerous.
My wife and kids were threatened. I had a gun pointed at me for over an hour. I throw my arm out toward the barn. My best fucking mate has just been murdered!
I stagger back with the force of my roar, feeling all control escaping me.
You better leave me alone,
I warn.
Just leave me the fuck alone until you can give me answers.
I back away to the wall of the barn and slump against the wood, lowering my arse to the dusty gravel before it can fall there. I sit fighting to rein myself in. If Lauren weren't dead already, I would kill her with my bare hands. It wouldn't be quick. It would be long and torturous. I should have acted earlier. I should have listened to my gut and intervened before John got there. I look up when I hear someone shout for space and I see a body bag being stretchered out of the barn. The size, the way the two women at each end of the stretcher move it with ease, tells me it's Lauren in that bag. Then another follows, this one negotiated by two men. My bottom lip quivers, my face falling into my palms. I can't watch. It's too final.
Jesse!
I look up and find Ava scrambling out of a car, her face frantic. I choke on nothing, bringing my bald fists to my temples and pushing into my skull. I want to go to her, shorten the time it'll take for her to make it to me, but my body refuses to function. So I remain on my ass, watching as she runs full pelt across the gravel toward me. I see her catch sight of the body bags. I see the falter in her stride. And when she finally makes it to me, she stops at my feet, looking down at my broken form. I'm struggling to keep my head up. But now she's this close, now I can see her, every perfect detail in her face. My body finds some life and manages to push its way up until I'm standing. She's biting her lip, her eyes brimming. I have nothing for her, only the agonizing news.
She fucking killed John.
Her inhale is sharp. The tears instant.
No,
she whispers, looking back to the stretcher. I tried to stop him. Her voice is breaking.
Oh my God, Jesse.
She chokes over her words.
I'm so sorry.
Her palms come up to her face like she's hiding, ashamed of herself. I snatch them away.
Don't you fucking apologize.
I warn, at risk of flying off the handle again.
Don't you dare, Ava.
The app, the trackers and the cars, I realized what you were trying to tell me. And then John showed up and I told him. He took my phone, I couldn't stop him, I called the police from the house. The impact of her body hitting mine when she throws herself into my arms nearly takes me off my feet.
I'm so sorry.
She sobs and I shake my head into her, holding her as tight as my aching shoulder will allow.
I thought I'd never see you again. I thought it was the end of the road.
I hold her tighter. Fuck the pain. It's nothing compared to the agony in my heart. Our road never ends, baby. I close my eyes and sink my face into her soft neck, searching for the comfort I know I can find. Never.
I remembered.
Her sobs are loud between her words. She's not bothering to try to restrain her emotions. I'm glad because I'm fucked if I can. Her tears are unstoppable, soaking my cheeks and her neck.
I remembered everything.
I know. I'm soul destroyed that her avalanche of memories was triggered by such a bleak, distressing moment in our history. Absolutely destroyed. There are a million wonderful and pinnacle moments in our lives together. Why did it have to be Lauren? I'm just so sorry it happened like that. She pulls out of my hold, shaking her head mildly. It wasn't her that triggered it all. Reaching for my face, she tenderly feels down my wet cheek. It was the pure terror in your eyes. I'd seen it before. I choke on my emotions, dropping my gaze until she forces my chin up. John's gone. I choke. I can barely see her through my blurry vision. Lip wobbling, she clutches me in her arms and hugs me with the force and love that I so need.
He would never have let anything hurt you,
she says, her voice thick.
The man was a fucking warrior and a stubborn one too.
I can't even bring myself to pull her up in her bad language.
He's gone because he knows how much I need you, how much the kids need you.
She takes my hand and lays it over her tummy. I'm not sure who's leaking the most tears now, her or me. I furiously wipe at my face, sniffing back my sadness. He's my hero too. She takes the top of my arm and rubs, frowning when I suck in air. What's this? A graze. I brush her off, not wanting to worry her. Not that she takes much notice. The short, bloody sleeve of my T-shirt is thrust up, revealing a tidy hole in my arm. Oh, my God. It's fine. Once again, I fight her off, and once again, she wins, slapping me away. Ava, for fuck's sake, it's fine. Stop flapping.
Have you had it looked at?
I'm in no mood to be poked and pulled about. She snorts, pointing to the paramedic hovering nearby.
Now, Ward, or so help me.
Her expression is fierce as she scrubs at her wet face and I shrink where I stand, thinking better of arguing back. I don't speak, and I also don't move, so Ava seizes my hand and all but manhandles me to the ambulance. Don't make me hurt you, Ward. Wide-eyed, I let her shove me onto the back of the ambulance and onto a waiting bed. She's taking no prisoners. And through my crippling hurt, anger, and guilt, I managed to locate some gratitude. My wife is back. All of her is back. And it's back with a fucking bang. Chapter 56. 8 months later. Nothing can prepare you for the loss of someone you adore with every fiber of your being, nor the grief or heartache that accompanies that loss. A big hole has been left in my very existence by the loss of John. Yet my heart is bursting with joyful memories. He was never far away, always there to pick me up when I fell down. His life was dedicated to me, to watching over me, to keeping his promise to his best friend. John was a good man, the best, and no matter how I tried to angle my thoughts, he didn't deserve to go. It wasn't his time. Lauren, however, needed to die. That may sound sadistic, maybe it is, but all I've wondered is how draining and damaging it must have been to live with so many demons. The reality is, I can't. I've been in some pretty dark places, have wanted to give up, but the victim in my journey through self-destruction was me and me alone. I never set out to hurt anyone. I never wanted revenge. All I really wanted was inner peace. As I sit in the steps in the garden, I watch Ava negotiate her pregnant belly to dip and pick up the hose, and I think for the first time in my existence, I really do have that peace. It's a blanket around me, warm and secure. It defies reason, really. More trauma and stress have been stirred into our already overflowing pot of shit. Yet now I feel almost tranquil. Initially, after we walked away from that barn, I wondered how we would ever get over what had happened. The elation of Ava finding her memories was saddened by the loss of John. I got myself in a state over the twins, what they saw, what they heard. It was only when we sat down with a family therapist at the suggestion of the liaison officer that I really realized that my babies truly weren't babies anymore. Not with their level heads, their matter-of-fact approach. I'd underestimated them at every turn, tried to keep them wrapped up in cotton wool and protected from the world. I failed. My past caught up with me again, but the twins looked at me that day, square in the eye, and told me that they were proud of me. Not ashamed, like I feared they would be. They were proud of me. I broke down. Didn't even try not to. I'm human. I'm a dad. A husband. My family is both my biggest weakness and my greatest strength. I live and breathe for them, and that will never change. Until the day I die, it will always be about them. I look over my shoulder when I hear Maddie talking, seeing her wandering back into the house with her phone to her ear. She's talking to some boy. My instinct is to go after her to confiscate that fucking phone, but I wisely stay on my ass where I'm safe from my wife's wrath. Maddie's 12. How serious can it be? I growl at her back and shake my head, returning my attention to the garden, before I change my mind and go trample her arse. Jacob's in the distance smacking tennis balls over the net, practicing his serve. Me? I have a beer in my hand, just listening to the therapeutic sounds of my wife and babies mooching about our home. This is heaven. This is Ava's Cloud Nine. This is where I'm supposed to be. And once again, the fates have brought me here. I want to argue with them this time, though. Ask them why I can't have John here, too. But that would be wasted breath. And John would say something along the lines of, "Get a fucking grip, you stupid motherfucker." I smile, breathing back my unrelenting sadness. Sadness I know he'd be furious at me for spending too much time on. John can go fuck himself. I actually laugh out loud at my bravery for even thinking it. I would never have said that to him if he was standing here before me. Yet I wish I could. I wish I could curse his ass off to his face, and I would welcome the thump to my jaw from his big, hard fist. What's so funny? Ava swishes the spray from the hose over the flower beds, eyeing me with a curious smile. Just thinking. I push myself to my feet and wander across the lawn to her, my gaze taking constant up and down trips over her beautiful form. God love her. She looks fit to burst. We're nearly 2 weeks overdue now, with no signs of baby making an appearance. I reach her and push my chest into her back, circling her tummy with my arms. My hands meet on the front of her pregnant belly with ease, although I still tease her. Only just. I smile into her neck when she thrusts her bottom into my groin. Don't do silly things like that. Closeness to this woman always stirs my cock, but contact renders it concrete. That'll never change. Why, Mr. Ward, is something poking into my back? She chuckles as she continues to drench the flower beds. Maybe I could fuck this baby out of you, I muse, thoughtful. You've made it too comfortable in there. We've had sex twice a day, every day, for the past 2 weeks. Not even your penis coming at it head-on is making it want to come out of hiding. Dropping the hose, I laugh. She turns in my arms, her belly now wedged between us. I look down fondly. Yes, she's certainly carrying big, but nothing in comparison to when she was expecting the twins. Laying my palms in the top, I stroke and feel, my heart swelling with happiness when the baby kicks against my right hand. He's having a party in there. Clearly he's got his dad's talented dance moves. Ava's hands land over mine and we feel together. You keep saying he. We don't know what the sex of Peanut Junior is yet. It's a boy, I assure her. It has to be. I've managed to hold on to my hair for this long. A girl might change that. Jacob and I can't be outnumbered. But Maddie and I can. You two have enough spunk between you for us to have 10 more boys and still be outspunked. I shift my hands and take hers, bringing them to my mouth and kissing each knuckle in turn, each and every one. She's beaming at me, her smile so strong with happiness I feel it warm my face. It's a boy, I affirm. Whatever you say, my lord. She turns away from me and brings my hands back around her tummy, holding them there as she starts waddling across the grass. I follow her steps, my chin resting atop her head. Let's mooch. Mooch away, I reply, letting her lead the way to the bottom of the lawn, where we pick up the gravel path through the flower beds that leads to the bench swing hidden at the bottom of the garden. The air is cool but not quite cold, yet the sun could be blazing down from the sky. I'm toasty warm, contented, calm, and serene. And all of that is being absorbed by my wife. A beautiful air of peace has surrounded her throughout this pregnancy. I've admired it daily as I've watched her, whether at home or at the club. She's been back to work, and I've made sure I've let her get on with it, though I've never been truly far. just far enough for her not to feel crowded, but close enough to sate my need for constant contact, even if that contact is just my eyes looking at her. This pregnancy has been an entirely different experience for me. I've not stressed, not faffed, not driven her up the wall with my neurotic worry, and she hasn't played me or used that worry as a tool to wind me up. There's been no faking labor to send me into meltdown, probably because she knows that this time there will be no meltdown. After all, I'm a pro now. I've got this. As we walk, I notice her leaning back at me more and more, her body getting tired. Rest? Her sigh is heavy. She's truly fed up now, but as I've told her time and again, these things can't be rushed. He'll come when he's ready. Helping her down onto the cushion and the bench, I take a seat beside her and push my feet into the ground, swinging us back and releasing. We rock smoothly, Ava's head resting on my shoulder. Kate's bringing a vindaloo around later. Another? I relax back. That baby will come out expecting a curry instead of your boob. She chuckles and quickly flinches as she does, her hand going to her tummy and rubbing. Okay, I ask softly, placing my hand over hers. Just a twinge. Pulling her head from my shoulder, she gazes up at me. Her lips twitch, her eyes glimmer. I know what's running through that wonderful mind of hers, though I humor her. What's tickled you? 12 years ago, you would have crapped your boxers at a twinge. I shrug, nonchalant. We're experts now. After the twins, this is a breeze, right? A sharp puff of laughter fans my face. A breeze? Speak for yourself, Jesse. You're not the one pushing what feels like a flaming watermelon out of my fanny. I've heard her cute analogy a few hundred times. I know. Turning into her, I pout playfully as I cup her boobs, circling my thumbs over her nipples until they pebble. Tonight, you're going to let me ram my deprived cock inside that sweet pussy of yours and stretch it in preparation. Her grin is thrilling and wanting and lustful. That's one of the few things that hasn't been different this time around. Her unrelenting craving for all things me. Thank God, because that would be a tragic loss. You're so selfless. Anything for you, baby. I lean in over her belly and rest my lips on hers. The usual sparks of magic happen inside me, my heart thrumming wildly. Deprived cock. Yes, deprived. Only a minute after leaving the snug warmth of that special place, my dick feels lonely. It's no lie. You going to challenge me? Wouldn't dream of it. Her smile lays on mine as my hands feel the delicious weight of her amazing boobs. Besides, I have to take all I can get because you're going to be out of service for a while.
You poor thing.
A rustling from beyond the bushes has me pulling away quickly, scanning the area. I cock my eyebrow at Ava, who indicates to the left with a nod of her head. I can see you, I call, getting comfortable and rocking the bench again when I realize it's stopped. Two heads pop out of the hedge, grinning. Neither of you would make stealth ninjas.
We were going to jump out and scare you, Jacob declares, breaking free from the branches and twigs, pulling a few leaves from his blonde mop. We're fed up of waiting for Peanut Jr.
He offers Maddie a helping hand when her blouse gets caught up.
You're fed up. Ava laughs. Try carrying this thing around with you for 9 months.
Don't be dramatic, I quip, patting the bench next to me for Maddie to come sit. It's not been that big the whole time. Maddie giggles as she jumps onto the bench and snuggles into my side, Jacob taking the side next to Ava.
Dad, seriously, do you want Mom to hurt you?
She'd have to catch me first, and that ain't happening when she's in that condition. I put an arm around each of my girls, looking across to Jacob. His head is lying on Ava's stomach, his ear pushed close. Ava's hands start threading through his blonde hair, stroking while he listens. We settle and swing for a while, all of us quiet and relaxed, legs swinging freely, heads resting on various shoulders. I could stay here all night. But it's getting chilly and Sam will be here soon with his girls, as well as Drew with his. I smile. Raya gave birth only last week to a little girl. Imogen. Bang on time. All these girls. By the rule of probability, Ava has to have a boy in there. I pray she has a boy in there. Come on. It's getting cold. I nod to Ava's nipples and a smirk, and she rolls her eyes. The gang will be here soon. Jacob is first off the bench, helping a puffing Ava to her feet. Thank you, darling. Her arm goes around his shoulders as they start back to the house together. My boy. My gorgeous, sweet, thoughtful boy. He's overtaken Maddie in height now, clearing her by a good few inches. He's not far off Ava. I feel the sleeve of my T-shirt lift and look out the corner of my eye to see Maddie inspecting the scar left behind. Though she doesn't look sad these days, when she's feeding her need to see it at least once a day. These days she smiles.
Did your life flash before your eyes, Dad?
I laugh and dip, hoisting her up over my shoulder and following on after Jacob and Ava. The sweet sound of my girl's squeal fills my ears.
Yes.
And you know what I thought?
What did you think?
She asks, bouncing upon my shoulder in time to my strides. I thought about how much I'd miss your sass.
No, you didn't,
she laughs, slapping my back.
Hey, Dad, can I go to the cinema on Friday with Robbie?
Robbie? So that's the flavor of the month. Sure you can. I set her on her feet when we make it to the house, leaving her behind as I follow Ava and Jacob. What are we watching? I call behind me.
You're hilarious.
Her exasperation makes me chuckle as I open the fridge and pull out some Sumpad. But that chuckle fades to nothing when it's swiped from my hand.
Hey!
Ava grins and sashays as best as she can to a stool, finger-dipping my jar as she clambers onto the seat.
What's yours is mine,
she declares, popping a delicious-looking finger into her mouth and making an over-the-top job of licking it clean. I hear the kids laugh as I sulk at my wife, wondering why, of all things she could crave, it has to be my pots of heaven. Sharing my vice is no joke. I've only just got to grips with Jacob pinching my passion. Share, I order, taking myself swiftly across the kitchen and joining her on the next stool, my mouth dropping open. I may even be dribbling. Humming, she scoops out a huge dollop and holds it out to me. This part of the sharing process I don't mind at all. My mouth watering, I move in to claim her finger. But she quickly diverts to her own mouth, lapping it up quickly on a satisfied smile and sparkly eyes. I recoil, disgusted by her game, though the kids seem to think it's hilarious. Only one word comes to mind. Three. I practically snarl, widening her grin.
Oh, boy,
Jacob sighs, collecting some juice from the fridge.
Mom, will you ever learn?
Don't mess with the peanut butter,
Maddie adds, resting her elbows on the counter and settling in for the show.
You'll pay and your bladder isn't as strong these days.
I laugh from the inside when Ava tosses her an indignant look, her finger hanging out of her mouth.
Stay out of it, sassy pants.
Maddie shrugs her shoulders, chin resting in the palms of her hands.
I'm my mother's daughter. Ask Dad.
She isn't wrong. Two, I say, turning back to Ava, my eyebrows high.
There's nothing wrong with my bladder.
She takes another huge helping of the good stuff, her nose high.
And if there is, it's your fault.
She nods at the kids in turn. One. I start drumming my fingers, all casual and cool, appearing tired of the light banter. I'm not tired at all. These moments, the simple moments, are some of my favorite family times. Mine, Ava whispers, plunging in her finger again and holding it up in demonstration before lapping it clean.
Get your own, Ward.
Zero, baby. I'm off the stool in a flash, my fingertips homing straight in on Ava's weak spots.
No!
The jar is quickly cast aside in favor of my arms.
You asked for it, Maddie sings,